Hello there, all. It is Thursday afternoon, and you hear that tune, so you know that it's time to head in the garden. We're going to pull up Ed Bajarski on the phone here momentarily, but first we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, 10 till 4 every day but Wednesday, with delivery available and bouquets by the jar or by subscription available with dahlias, snaps, and more. The Flower Farm, 772-3464. Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown grace. All right, Ed, are you on the line with us?
I'm sitting here hydrating in a shady spot.
Nice, okay. Yeah, what a week, huh? That such a thing is a health and safety necessity when working outside.
It's been a strange week. I mean, we've gone, it was sunny last Thursday. It's magnificent today. And we've had, I think, 5 inches of rain in between.
Yeah, afraid so.
And must be time in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah, this summer. Oh, boy. Gosh, well, it's full bloom. Here we are coming up on the end of July. Gardens are going off, especially on a day like today.
They are, and keeping up with them is a challenge, from everything from the weeds, you know, enough said about that, they're growing. The slugs, I've been shooting slugs with my ammonia and water spray the last few evenings, trying to thin out that herd. And the extremes do make it rough on plants. It's in the house where it's gone from highs of 60 to highs of 97 yesterday, for mine at least. Keeping up with those, keeping up with the moisture requirements, because they are pumping a lot of water, plants are, tomatoes, cucumbers, beans, whatever is in there, lettuce too, all that are moving a lot of water out, and you kind of got to be careful. You know you have to water, but then we get the high humidity-rich results from moisture in the air, which then condenses on the cool plants overnight, and then it's just perfect conditions for the different kinds of mildew, powdery mildew and downy mildew, and other assorted molds and fungi which are floating around just waiting for it.
Mm. Yeah, it is a never-ending labor. Labor of love, but the work never, ever stops this time of year.
Yeah. So again, in the greenhouse at least, I've been pinching, this morning I was out there pinching more of the suckers off both tomatoes as well as cucumbers, trying to push the energy of the plant, not into growing more vegetative growth, but trying to go into those flowers which are blooming now, pickling the tomatoes as we go. I mean, and I've even been hand pollinating some of the squash. I've got some zucchini squash as well as some winter squash in there, helping those along. But again, the problem, and there's not a whole lot I can do about it, but I'm noticing that some of my male squash blossoms are not producing pollen. You know, they just are not opening, the stamens are not opening up. And again, I was just reading that the temperature-dependent issue there. So that's, you know, it is what it is. So I'm just looking hard and trying to help them out. Maybe the bees will see in a couple weeks, see if they get pollinated. But the cucumbers are looking good. We're going to pick our first cucumbers finally tonight.
Nice. Yeah, I noticed that myself last week. Some squash blossoms that had opened up on Sunday morning got full of rain. Looked out there, the stamen in the flower was underwater from rain.
Yeah, that doesn't help. It's hard. The bees aren't much for diving. Yeah. Diving to try to get pollen. That's a tough one. Outdoor, there's all sorts of things. I don't know about in your neighborhood down there, but cherries are ripening. Pie cherries are ripening right now as we speak. And some of them are ready for picking tonight. I was squeezing and fondling some of those, you know, and you can feel the difference, and of course you can taste the difference. So it may be cherry pie weekend if things go well. Wow. So get off. And then raspberries 3 weeks late, for us at least. I picked 5 raspberries so far this week. maybe this weekend we'll pick some more. But the main thing my wife and I are going to do tonight or tomorrow is we've got a shelter over our raspberry patch, a shelter frame, that we then will cover with just the top cover of the shelter to try to keep the rain off the raspberries to help them ripen and to prevent them from rotting so quickly on the plant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, it'll be more pleasant for us to walk in there, too, to pick them if we're not in the rain trying to pick moldy raspberries.
I'm sure that's true. So will you leave that shelter up from here on out till they ripen and are ready to pick, or?
Yes. Yeah, the shelter frame stays up through the winter, but it'll go from now until, who knows, end of August or so, depending on how long it takes to ripen. Like I said, they're late this year. Then my blackberries, too, are just barely showing a hint of color. But the nice thing about those is they are much more mildew, mold resistant than the raspberries, so I don't have them covered. That may be the next one, because I did just salvage a Costco shelter from another friend. So, you know, the more, I swear, every year we're covering the ground, the gardens, with more and more plastic, so that we can have some degree of control over moisture levels, dryness levels, and all of that. So I did just uncover my sweet corn. There's this big remote hope that I'll get a couple of years of sweet corn. It is tasseling, but I'll let you know if it happens. But I'm going to be moving the hoops that covered those over to another bed where I've got more lettuce to go in, lettuce and other greens to go into the ground, again, to help control the moisture levels at this point, and, you know, keep it a little warmer, because at least in the forecast, it's from Friday night, temperatures are just supposed to be decreasing for the first 10 days of August, which doesn't look promising. And I won't even say the F word that it kind of looks like.
No. It's summer. It is currently summer.
I know. We're an inch away from setting the all-time record for most rainfall in a summer.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, and we got the whole month of August and part of September to go. So break that record pretty handily. Yeah, you guys too.
We're doing pretty good that way. Yep.
So, again, with all of that, I mean, looking at our drainage is probably makes sense, you know, and how we can, if we have to add more sand to our soggy garden beds, or raise them up if we can. And think about that. I've gotten several calls just this week. I'm going to look at some drainage issues, French drains and stuff, how I can help the folks drain water. Some of it, they suggested, might have come from the neighbors. And in fact, my neighbor just suggested that I'm directing water onto his property. So we've got drainage issues in my neighborhood, too.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Neighborly stuff.
Yeah, being good neighbors means you try not to dump the water over onto their property, you know, without, if you don't have a ditch or a creek or something like that flowing through that is a natural drainage.
Right.
And then the other thing that we can do, which is kind of, this is looking ahead, this is, you know, optimistic for, well, again, for 9 months in the future, is actually planning for and ordering bulbs for fall planting. Tulips, daffodils, crocus, scilla, snowdrops, and other assorted stuff. So while our memories are fresh, or while our records are fresh, or we look back through maybe at the photos that we took this spring of the nice flowers, or maybe there are pictures of places where there are depths, where there are not, were not flowers this spring, maybe we can plan to plant some more bulbs, which in those areas, and that too is dependent on the drainage issue, because again, pretty much all of the bulbs we want to plant need good drainage.
Such a good point. What would be like your top three tips for somebody who's looking out at their beds and seeing poor drainage this summer? What are some simple, basic guidelines for them to approach fixing up their beds, redesigning stuff this fall?
So first, look at where is the water coming from. If you're gardening on a slope, as many of us are, as opposed to flat ground, so at least I'm kind of on a hillside, and I build my boxes, so they're relatively not sloping too much from one end to the other. But say my ground, if I can see that there's water coming from above, whether that's I've got some place where I can see it's obviously coming out of the forest areas, and that I need to stop or redirect the water, and again, figuring out where to redirect the water sometimes is the most difficult part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're on flat ground, then it's pretty much you have to raise the beds, raise the boxes is your only option. But if you've got a choice, if you do have some slope, if you do have some ditches or drainages to one side or the other yard, then that would be good. If it's coming from your neighbors, I mean, be neighborly to start with and talk to the neighbor about, say, hey, can we work together on this to put something, you know, maybe down the property line? And then, of course, again, I was talking to my neighbor about this, figuring out where is the property line.
Mm-hmm.
So that we know, you know, if we're going to dig the ditch, if we want to do it down the property line, or, you know, I don't mind if we dig this stuff out, I'll take the stuff we dig out because then I'll use that material to make some new beds or something like that I can plant in. You know, that might be okay. Or he might say, hey, yeah, it's okay, dump it over on this side and I'll take it. And then, of course, if there's, you know, we're looking at stumps to be moved, you know, where can I put these things?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first step. And then if you're going to be putting in French drains, a drain pipe to take it to the low spot, whatever that low spot is to take the water away. Get the material, get the filter fabric, get some clean washed gravel, perforated plastic pipe that's going to go in those trenches, and hire a young person to dig the trenches.
Yep.
Really good thing. I can highly recommend.
Yeah, good point.
But be there to make sure that once they dig the trench, that the trench is going to drain to that place for disposal, that you're not digging it so it's draining in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, using a level and with a, say, something like an 8-foot-long 2x4 or something like that, you can put down in the bottom of the trench with a level on it. And, you know, water flows downhill. That's kind of one of Mother Nature's really most important rules to remember. So drain it, you know, dig it properly. So the landscaping fabric or the filter fabric, which is kind of felty black material, kind of like fleece, that material goes down in the trench, down in the bottom of the trench, and up the sides. So say you have a 3-foot-deep trench that you're digging, which is a deep one, you figure you need 3 feet of fabric on each side plus a foot down to the bottom to catch the water. So the pipe, you lay your fabric in and up the sides. The pipe, the drain pipe, perforated pipe, goes down in the bottom, and you hopefully can start at the lower end and work it up to you. You put some drain rock, some clean washed gravel on top of the plastic pipe. And then you fold over the filter fabric on top of the gravel. So the filter fabric gets the water, kind of soaks in the water from the surrounding soil. And then you may very well fill the above the filter fabric with some of the soil you took out. You know, but now you've got a place where that water can seep down into and then be carried away from the area that you want to be dry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you don't have to necessarily fill all the way to the surface with gravel, though you can, That will give more of a red color for it. The other main purpose, couple purposes of the filter fabric, other than wicking water to the pipe, is also to prevent the pipe from getting plugged up with fine material that might be washed down out of the soil, as well as keeping the roots, tree roots, plant roots, grass roots, whatever, from growing into that trench too quickly also. I mean, it may very well happen 10 years from now, you know, if you've got much stuff growing around there, but still that will delay things and keep your trench drain working longer.
Hmm. Good point. Dang, that's a great description of installing a drainage system like that. Thank you so much for that tip.
I mean, maybe you're going to be lucky enough that you can actually get a machine, a small excavator in, to do the digging. That'd be great. You know, but I know how some places the ground is so soft, you don't really have that choice. I mean, the excavator is going to sink out of sight before you get your drainage, and then you've got a new yard ornament. plant some vines around, and then that's rather expensive if you're buying this new yard ornament that sunk there. Or bring in a larger piece of equipment to retrieve the smaller one.
Oh, boy.
Having seen it and done it, I don't want to do it again.
Good point. Okay, those are good tips on drainage. Very good. Much appreciated. Say, we just got a call. Let's put them on the air here. Line one, hello, welcome to In the Garden. You're on the phone.
Hi, Omar. Hi, Ed. Hey, I called last week about the potatoes and just wanted to report back that the stems at the root or the base of the soil were fine and stuff, so plants seem to be doing all right, and the potatoes look good, so it must have been just, like Ed was saying, an early variety. But I had another question that came up during the week, is that should you nip off the flowers that are blooming on the other potatoes? Does it help to nip those off because you can get bigger potato yields and not let them go to seed?
That's, you can. It isn't, in my view and others, it isn't as important as the removal of scapes from garlic. Certainly, you know, the commercial guys don't bother. However, if you have, some of the varieties are also prone after they flower. Sometimes you will make fruits, you know, the little green, they look like green tomatoes on the potatoes. Some varieties do it much more than others. And those, that certainly is one place where more energy can be going to, you know, trying to ripen those fruits, make seeds and all that, which you don't want to do, unless you're Luther Burbank. So yeah, you can go ahead and remove them if you want. I mean, honestly, I don't worry about that so much. I have been looking at mine. There's some really nice colorful, all different colors, from whites to pinks to lavender to purple flowers, and it's quite ornamental in my view.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got time on your hands, go for it. Make a little bouquet, bring it indoors, surprise someone.
All right. Well, thank you again, Ed, for the information. You have a good week there.
You're welcome. Hopefully they're tasty potatoes that you dug up.
Oh, yeah. They are. Very, very good.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. That's great. Well,
thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. That's a bit of good news. As far as chasing down the problem in that potato patch, turned out to not be such a problem, but just an early variety. That's real great.
Yeah, and again, that's something even to make a note of if you're, again, you know, depending on how good your memory is, to say, hey, if I'm growing these varieties again, and if I kept track of when I planted them, then you can even plan for when I'm going to be digging them, or if you're, you know, whether you're just for yourself or for marketing purposes, that's a valuable bit of information for the future.
Good point. Good point.
You know, I want to have some potatoes for... Well, I don't know, 4th of July is a little bit of a challenge. But for the 1st of August or whatever that happens to be, you've got an event coming up, so maybe you can plan for it. And, of course, having the same kind of weather as we had, yeah, sure. might be a couple weeks earlier or later next year.
True. Yeah, good point, though. That is one for the notebook, then.
It is. And, I mean, that's something I've been even making a note of, too, that I noticed. I've got about two-thirds of my garlic harvested. And I definitely noticed the difference this year versus last year in certain varieties which did better than others this year versus last year, and certain varieties that we talked about, the mold issue that I've been having at least. So that was another one that certain varieties seem to be more susceptible to that too. Mm. So again, you know, for my planning at least, of course, that it isn't like I can decide, oh, I'm going to plant a lot more of this kind in October, anticipating that I'm going to have however much rain next year, or it's going to be a drier season. Mm. You know, that's really sticking my neck out there in my predictions, I guess.
True, true. Might not outweigh the benefit of having a variety.
Exactly. You know, so yeah, so there is a real difference in them until I get them cured, and when I will then be measuring, you're actually sizing, grading the harvest, then I'll have kind of a better handle on that too, based on how many I get and how many of the large and extra large and jumbo size bulbs I get this year. Mm. They were looking really good. If we'd had, again, you know, 2 weeks, 3 more weeks of sunshine back in early July, there probably would have been better sizes on those, some of those varieties than others.
Hmm. Huh. Okay, that kind of raises an interesting question, or makes me wonder anyway. A variety that would have kind of grown to a more robust clove size, maturity, if it weren't for the rains and having to come out a little bit early, what's the difference when you're selecting the bulbs to plant again later this year? If it's the same variety, or how does it go? You know, if it would have grown to a greater maturity if it had more time, what's the calculus there as far as choosing your seed crop?
Yeah. So generally, and that's important, because as we are harvesting now, just like if we're harvesting potatoes and saving seed for next year, you know, so I am setting aside, making sure to set aside enough garlic, large, the biggest bulbs, for replanting for the fall. Mm-hmm. And knowing, again, depending on varieties, so some varieties have usually average 4 to 5 plantable cloves in a bulb, and some varieties may get 6 to 8 of them. So that means I have to save from, you know, 20 to, well, from say 15 to 25% of my crop if I want to plant the same amount for next year's harvest. Mm-hmm. So that's in the planning stage, which of course means I can't eat all that stuff, or I can't sell it all off, assuming that I'm not buying more from outside and bringing in some new varieties. So yeah, that's definitely in the calculations. Very important to think about how much, again, I'm choosing the best and the biggest that are going to be set aside for that planting. And then of course, even as we'll probably talk about that near the end of September, one of our latest programs. But again, trying to make sure that as I'm harvesting them, those ones that did have some indications of mold, those are set aside for eating soonest, mm-hmm. and not saved for the seed crop for later.
Yes. That raises one more little question for me. With the garlic that you're harvesting now, and, you know, making those determinations, what's seed, what's dinner, or what will you cure for storing? Do you go about the same process with curing those that you'll be planting again, as well as those that you're hoping to maximize their storage life? Is it the same curing process?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, some of this stuff, as I'm sorting, as I'm cleaning garlic, cleaning being peeling off the outer skins, making it look pretty, and I'm setting aside the smallest ones for immediate eating or for sale, you know, as green garlic, and then others will come. But yes, the curing process for the perfect ones is the same. It's drying it out. It's hanging up the bunches or putting them out on shelves. I've got, my whole yard smells of garlic, part also because of the disposal off in the one side, over the edge of the bank where some of it goes. Mm-hmm. But the greenhouse is full, and the furnace room is full, and the garage over the wood stove is full of garlic hanging, and I've still got to make room for some more. So that's getting it dried, and I'm rotating it usually from the furnace room is the ideal place because it's warmer and drier. Well, today my greenhouse is 95. Mm-hmm. My furnace is quite that hot. But I can't count on that to be able to finish the garlic there. So I'll gradually rotate the garlic out of the greenhouse and out of the garage, trimming off the stems, and to finish the drying process in the furnace room. And then when it's dried down to as dry as I hope to get it, it will then be stored at least for a month or two in the upstairs of my garage, which is drier still, but it's darker and cooler.
Hmm.
A little bit cooler. I mean, it's still 55 to 60 degrees. I don't want to get too cool because then that can stimulate sprouting too soon.
Right.
So again, it's really a kind of a careful, there's a lot of garlic movement, let's put it that way, in my yard.
Yeah. Well, needs to be done, but well worth the effort.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the point where I pretty much have garlic in my truck every day as I'm delivering it for either to friends or to local establishments here.
Nice.
So, you know, there's a trail of garlic wafting.
good. Oh, that's a good picture. Okay, well, gosh, time's flying today. Are there any parting thoughts you want to put out there for folks this time of year, pruning, keeping an eye on stuff?
Yeah, definitely doing the ongoing cleanup, again, whether it's in the greenhouse or outside too. You know, I mentioned about, you know, I've been shooting slugs. Well, the slugs are going for some of that nice fresh green stuff and other stuff. So do keep cleaning up outdoors and any of the leaves indoors. So cucumber leaves, squash leaves, the spent, once the blossoms on the squash finish, you know, one day, 2 days later, of course, they start to wrinkle up. And very gently try to pull those off the plants so that the mildew doesn't set in and go down into the squash plants.
Mm-hmm.
Removing the lower leaves on all of those plants, tomatoes too, so that we don't get the mold and mildew growing there, and that helps in the air circulation too. So again, and I'm setting up more fans, partly to help dry garlic, partly to help dry out the greenhouse generally, try to keeping it drier as best we can, which is a challenge with the conditions we have.
Oh yeah, that's a great tip. Yeah, as people's squashes are blossoming, pollinating, I can definitely attest. I just noticed one of mine I missed that very same way, and the squash is it's a victim of its own mildewed blossom now.
Yes, they are very, very moisture sensitive. So again, it's vigilance in the garden. Hopefully you've got the time to be able to walk through it, you know, every day, a couple times a day, or many, to be doing that, opening and closing vents or whatever it is for the greenhouse. So, you know, it's a cloudy morning, go off to work, and the greenhouse is tightly shut, and then the sun comes out, and it's 95 or 117 degrees by noon, and, some of it's over.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay, yep, great tips. Ongoing cleanup, keeping an eye on it, keeping everybody happy.
Yep, and planting, start. So right now, I think somebody else was telling me it's just about time to start thinking about planting spinach and radishes and other cool weather crops too. Even a last crop of lettuce wouldn't hurt too, to be getting ready. And whether you're starting them indoors or in your greenhouse, if you've got the space, getting them ready to go in underneath hoops or somewhere for that late crop that we're eating into, hopefully into October, November, and beyond, depending on what kind of a winter Mother Nature gives us.
Mm. Ah, that's a good tip. Okay, and maybe one last parting question / recommendation. Where, you mentioned buying bulbs this time of year. Where do you like, what's one good recommendation that you have for listeners about where you like to buy bulbs this week?
Oh, that's a challenging one because, I mean, I'm buying, you know, getting wholesale quantities. My wife and I got together and for several different projects, and now we've got a couple thousand bulbs coming. So, I mean, there's a place, again, if you get together with some friends, you can do it. Van Zyverdon or Van Blum, they're kind of together. And they ship out of Washington, but they are still Dutch bulbs. You know, and there is the famous online retailer whose name shall not be mentioned, but they sell them too. The challenge we bought from them because we were looking for something specific, couldn't find them elsewhere, and actually got bulbs that were labeled completely wrong. You know, they've got a return policy and all that, but still, getting a trusted source, or again, work with your local folks and say, hey, I'd like to, and it's probably going to mean asking them, hey, I would like 50 or 100 of these, which is kind of like a standard box size or package size. To work with somebody local who, again, has the experience and has been satisfied in the past with what they've gotten, I think that's important.
That's a great idea. Yep.
So find a reputable source and use them. And I've been ordering from these folks for, 30-some years. So I've been generally happy. And if I'm not happy with something and I let them know, you know, this particular box was not very good, they give me credit. So that's important.
True. Okay. Well, gosh, thanks for those great, useful tips this weekend. We'll let you dive back into it. The sunshine is a limited commodity this week, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah, there's more garlic to be harvested, so that's why I'm headed home.
Okay. Well, enjoy, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, Ed.
You're welcome.
We'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Bye, Art.
Okay. That's In the Garden. Master Gardener Ed Bajarski coming through with very useful information about how to make the most of our little plots of earth here. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. Selling bouquets by the jar or by subscription with delivery available in the evenings. Flower Farm is out at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. every day but Wednesday, 772-3464. Coming up next here on KFSK, we'll have High Country Music. The DJ today is Laura Lee Mason. So it's music till 4 o'clock, and then it's All Things Considered from NPR. That's a nationwide look at the news with your local news at 4:30. Statewide news at 6 from Alaska News Nightly. And then at 6:30, classical music. It's Classic with Matt Lenhard, 6:30 till 9 tonight. Then the TED Radio Hour from 9 till 10. The theme tonight is The Power of Spaces. Then at 10 p.m. you'll hear Radio Free Petersburg with Chris Weiss. Jazz and Blues, 10 till midnight. Thank you very much, Chris Weiss, for always putting together a great show. And then midnight, it's BBC World Service World News broadcast live from London. Thanks for listening, and now to the High Country. When I die, don't